Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the fourth episode of Celebration of Cinema, or Celebrate Our Cinemas, if you prefer, a brand new limited edition series of podcasts brought to you by Empire in association with those fine and funky folks at Meerkat Movies from Compare the Market. The goal of the show is simple. Each week, I interview someone from the world of film about the movies and the movie-going experiences that shaped them. What was the film that lit a fire under their cinematic backsides? What film made them laugh the most, cry the most, or scared the bejesus out of them the most? What's their favourite cinema in the whole wide world? And perhaps, most important of all, what's their movie snack of choice? And this is all in service, of course, of celebrating the simple act of going to the cinema, which, I don't know about you folks, I will never take for granted again. This week, I am honoured to be joined by one of the finest and funniest people I know, Mr. Simon Pegg. You'll know him, of course, as the star of the Cornetto trilogy of films, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End, which he also co-wrote with their director, Edgar Wright. But he's also starred as Scotty in the modern Star Trek movies, Benji Dunn in the Mission Impossible franchise, and much, much more. He's an actor, he's a writer, and a dyed-in-the-wool film geek who grew up on a diet of cinema. And other actual food, too. You can't survive on cinema. That's just fanciful nonsense. He's been shooting Mission Impossible 7 for a while now and recently also moved on to shooting a new TV series, The Undeclared War. But he was kind enough to take a break from that and jump onto Squadcast with me the other week for a good old in-depth natter about movies, including recollections of what it's like to watch his own films on the big screen, and that time he nearly killed Johnny Knoxville. As always with Simon, a good time was had by all, and I hope that you guys enjoy it. A quick note though, Simon's AirPods nearly died during this interview, literally. Not kidding, one fell out of a window when he went to shut it and plummeted three stories. Turns out though, those things are pretty hardy and robust, and so we carried on. But that is why his sound changes about halfway through the interview, in case you were wondering. Okay, that's enough of me. Here is Simon Pegg. Do please enjoy. We're delighted to be joined on this very special Celebration of Cinema podcast by the one, the only, Mr. Simon Pegg. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. Very well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you for joining us, taking time out from your busy schedule. You are, can we say whether you're on your own Mission Impossible 7 duty at the moment? Are you climbing anything at the moment? Are you being shot at? Are you running around? What's happening?
I am on Mission Impossible 7 indefinitely. I don't think I'm going to be on 8. I'm not going to be in 8 because I'll still be shooting 7, even when they're shooting 8. Yeah, no, I am. And, you know, we've been buffeted by circumstance on this one, not least, well, the pandemic mainly. It's caused a lot of sort of, hiccups and headaches. But we've kind of set the bar on how to film in this situation. That's all down to Tom. You know, he's just been putting fires out and talking to governments and all sorts of crazy stuff. So despite the setbacks that we have had, you know, we made a pretty damn good job of it. It's going to be insane. It's just going to be insane.
It's been wild. I mean, I was lucky enough to see the featurette, which I still don't think is out yet, of
the
Tom.
Sizzurreal.
Yeah, of Tom doing that incredible
jump one.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's two. I saw him on Sunday. He came over to my house on Sunday and I haven't seen him for a little while. And then he said, you haven't seen the new Sizzurreal. There's a new sizzle reel, and it's kind of like all footage from the film cut together. It's Lornbal's written music, especially for this reel, and it's kind of to show, I guess, show distributors and stuff, getting them amped up. He said, I'll bring it around tomorrow night after work, and we'll watch it. And so the following night, he landed his fucking helicopter in my garden. Okay, came out with a thumb drive. I got it. He's so keen.
At least he's doing that. Usually he just crashes through your ceiling, doesn't he? He just crashes through the roof.
We've taught him to land it now as opposed to crash it on a mountain.
There's every chance he might just slowly lower himself into this interview just behind you. And
Who knows? It could happen. He's living nearby me at the moment, which is why he's able to, you know, land his chopper in my property.
Is he in the shed like Ed? Is that where he was?
Yep, I keep him tethered to a PS5.
Well, the reason I bring up Mission 7 is because I think that is going to be a film specifically designed to get people back into cinemas and reconnecting with cinemas again, because obviously we've been deprived to a great extent of that experience during the pandemic. And what's it been like for you? I know you've been working an awful lot during it, but yeah, have you been able to keep that cinema going experience alive? Have you missed it?
I have missed it, yeah. And I've missed the, what I miss about the cinema going experience is the sort of community of it. You know, I'm lucky enough to have a little screening room of my own that I've built, which is pretty nice and has the vibe of a cinema. But it's not going and, you know, buying your ticket and buying snacks and sitting with lots of strangers and having a communal experience, you know, which is the real crux of what cinema is. It's a shared communal experience. And so when I have been to the cinema, even in the last 2 years, to see, what did I get to see? I saw Tenet, and I saw Nobody. I saw In the Heights, and I think that's it, really.
Mm.
I want to get back to those rooms that are just, I can't say what I saw because I'm signed an NDA. But yeah, it's lovely to see things on that big screen again, but I want to have that coupled with the other facet of cinema going, which is being with other people.
Yeah, getting that experience, you know, when laughter's infectious, scares are infectious.
Yeah.
Tears, you know, it's a good kind of infectious. That's what we like.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the kind of pandemic we want. A pandemic is fun.
A fundemic, if you will.
There it is.
Have you thought about, you know, turning your own private screen room into a kind of cinema and having that full cinematic experience of, you know, charging your family members a sort of fee every month to come and see stuff? And
we did
popcorn.
Have all the neighbors around to watch the finals of the Euros, actually, because we were fairly bubbled and vaccinated. So we filled all the seats and had a little party in there. But it's mainly just me and my daughter go in there and watch horror movies.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's the dream. Well, let's take you back. I'm going to start off by taking you back through to the dim and distant days of the past. And the cinema and the film, if you can remember them, that made you fall in love with cinema going. What was your cinema growing up? What was your local?
My local was the ABC in St. Aldate Street, Gloucester. Don't look for it. It's not there anymore. It's now a restaurant or something. And I named my little screening room the ABC as well, just in honor of it.
Oh.
And did the color scheme the same. It was a sort of three screener. And I saw all my formative movies there. The first movie I remember going to see is Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger, which I went to see with my dad. We lived on the same street as the cinema. So I remember dad and I just came out of we had a music shop. So we came out of the door of the shop, walked down 10 doors to the ABC and went and saw, you know, Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger, which was an amazing spectacle. It was Ray Harryhausen and, you know, it was monsters and fantasy and all the things that would become my wheelhouse. And it was, and I think I was probably five, you know, so that I was really young.
And because I remember the same experience, you know, going to see things like Superman 3 and being utterly terrified by Superman 3.
It's scary, that bit when she becomes a robot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't be ashamed of that.
But I was talking about all the Robert Vaughn stuff. That's just scary in general. but it is. I mean, that really, really freaked me out. But I admit, it's just there's something about going as a kid and just stocking up in sweets and just not sometimes even necessarily knowing what film you're going to go see, but you just become immersed in whatever they show.
The Pearl and Dean music, which they've started reusing again now, is still very much is a trigger for me when I hear it. I just get that feeling of being in that big room and it smelt a certain way and it felt a certain way. And I think in those days people smoked in the cinema as well. So you even see like smoke in the projector stream. But I saw a lot of films with my nan, Pete's Dragon, The Wilderness Family, the Disney movies with like Kurt Russell, the Strongest Man in the World, and Digby, the Biggest Dog in the World. And yeah, I saw a lot of those movies at that same cinema. And then of course, you know, by the time I got to eight, then it was Star Wars and Superman and Indiana Jones and all those films that I saw there too. Mm.
Do you remember your first Star Wars experience?
I remember coming out. I remember buying a poster at the kiosk afterwards and running up the road pretending it was a blaster and being and having that amazing experience of going in when it's light, which, you know, we went in the afternoon, and coming out and it was dark, and the sky, you know, just the space was above me, and having felt like something had shifted entirely, something amazing had just happened to me. I'd seen something which moved me on such a, you know, a sort of molecular level, as has been demonstrated throughout my life ever since. You know, it kind of like it, I felt changed and inspired and in love. You know,
so the it's the ABC in Gloucester, so that starts you off, but you've seen films, I presume, all over the world. So do you have a favorite cinema? Is there one that stands out? Doesn't have to be in London, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I love the, obviously the Cinerama Dome in LA is such a, you know, an amazing screen. And sadly, it looks like it might be shutting down unless some, you know, nice movie making benefactor buys it. Quentin, looking at you. I love the Angelica in New York, which is on East Tarriston Street, that I've seen a lot of art movies in, you know. I remember, I just had happy memories of that cinema. And the Alamo Drafthouse in Austin in Texas, where we've had some incredible times with the Cornetto movies, because they embrace those, you know, that's like the kind of nerd hub of the United States. And going there was like returning to the mothership. It was just sort of amazing. They even played Spaced on, at that cinema. They did a sort of like marathon of the show. They were so kind of on our side. It felt like we were, you know, I don't know. It just was, it was, we've had some lovely times there. So yeah. And in London, the Empire Leicester Square, when it was big, you know, when it was the one big screen, because I remember traveling there to see Back to the Future Part 2 in 1989. But then I've also had great experiences at the Odeon Leicester Square as well. There's lots of them around the world.
One of the things I've been asking people throughout this series is just about the experience of watching your own movies with crowds.
Yeah.
And that must be incredibly intense and surreal. And I imagine this changed a lot over the years as well. So I imagine the experience of watching Sean for the first time with an audience is very different from, say, the experience of watching Mission Impossible Fallout with an audience. But is it, or has it changed over the years for you?
Yeah, because also because Sean was all on us. Do you know what I mean? It was our baby. And so Edgar, me and Naira and Nick, I think we all snuck into the Odeon Camden on the night of its release and sat at the back and watched it with the audience. And that it was kind of nerve wracking and amazing and brilliant. And then when we took Sean on tour in the US, we'd watch it in cinemas. We did this huge tour and we'd watch it in like a little cinema in Detroit and in Minneapolis and all these places. And it was so strange, as was with Hot Fuzz as well. And with The World's End to a lesser extent, but particularly Shaun of the Dead, was to be in these little, you know, sort of cinemas in the US and see Crouch End. It's like the last place you would ever expect to see the florist in Crouch End is in, you know, Birmingham, Alabama. And, It was great, and we'd always sneak in for with Hot Fuzz. We'd always with Sean, we'd always come in for the you know, the final Winchester sequence with Hot Fuzz. We'd always make sure we got back for Tim Dalton getting impaled, and then for The World's End, we always got back for the final sort of showdown with the network and the Cornetto rapper, because we knew people were waiting for that.
So then, obviously, you're popping out, you're having dinner while this is going on, and you're hoping that the audience isn't doing the same thing, that you come back and there's an empty cinema and then everyone's just coming back in gradually at the same time as you are. I hear there's a Cornetto rapper now. We should be here for that.
That's the terror.
Yeah, and now with the likes of the Mission movies, what's that experience like for you?
It's great. You know, it's weird. Sometimes it's much nicer to watch a films like that with this goes for all the films, it's much nicer to watch them with a crowd, with a paying audience rather than a premiere audience. Premiere audiences are strange animals, you know, because they're all invited and it's a lot of industry, and you know, what's supposed to be this night when it's like it's supposed to be the most amazing kind of screening, it never is. It always feels a little bit flat. The Americans always get really freaked out when they come over for British premieres, particularly for comedies, because they come out and they feel like it had gone badly, because everyone was very polite and restrained, but it's because they haven't invested anything in it. They've just come along because they want a night out, and it's not really about the film, it's about the event. Mm-hmm. So going to see films publicly, which I always try and do if I can, you know, like just let the cinema owner know I'm going to come and sneak in at the back and watch it with a real crowd, with a crowd who would want to see the movie. Not suggesting the people at the premiere don't, but it's just a different vibe.
Yeah,
I remember the screening of when we showed Paul at South by Southwest in Austin again, actually, and that was an amazing night. That film, it was a double bill of Paul and Bridesmaids. So by the end of the night, everybody was just, you know, wet panted. It was it was a good night.
I like to wet myself before going to the cinema just to save time, basically. Yeah.
Pre-wetted.
Yeah, pre-wetted.
You're pre-fed, right, pre-wetted.
Yeah, precisely. That kind of brings me on to my next question, which was about great cinema-going experiences, those moments when crowds go wild. You've talked there about a few of the key moments in the Cornetto trilogy movies, and you know, there must be moments, like Tim Messenger's death, for example, in Hot Fuzz. That must be a moment sends a crowd wild.
It's always fun to be in there for those moments, and I always like to be, you know, if I'm watching Hot Fuzz through with an audience, then I look forward to moments like that to particularly Tim Messenger's death, which is so violent. And in The World's End, the fights, you know, the bathroom fight and the beehive fight, you know, which I really, really love. I remember I was in the Cinerama Dome for the premiere of The World's End, and it was a really great night. It was a good premiere. There was loads of people there. And Dave Grohl was sat down about five seats in front of me. He didn't know anything of what the film was about. And in the middle of the bathroom scene, when the guy's head comes out, when Gary tackles the guy and his head comes out, he turned around and looked at me and he went, "What the fuck?" And then another great memory related to The World's End is The World's End screening at Comic-Con. And Bill Paxton, bless his heart, he came to the screening. And he was such a sweet man, really lovely.
Yeah.
And of course, we were so thrilled to meet him. And he sat next to me at the screening, and there's a moment in it when all the way through he's going, "Oh man, oh man," like he sounded like Hudson, right? And then there's a bit of it when Andy says to Gary, "Oh, you got a scar on your finger because you tried to do that thing that you were playing the knife game from Aliens."
Yes.
And Bill sort of, he elbowed me and went, "Oh, man." it was just amazing. He's such a cool guy.
Oh, man, that's extraordinary. Oh, I love that. I love that. And what about as a pure punter? Because, you know, I remember growing up and you go to the cinema in Northern Ireland, in my case, and audiences are fairly well-behaved and are fairly polite and they're fairly genteel. And it wasn't until I saw a screening of The Fugitive when I went to Canada in 1993 and the train crash happened. And at the end of the train crash sequence, the entire audience erupted into applause, that I realized that you can actually interact with a film in that way. And it transformed everything for me. Did you find that growing up as well, that audiences over here were reserved, or were there moments of grand audience acclaim and an eruption that stuck with you?
Generally, I think we are, you know, and you, that's no more apparent than when you go over to the States, particularly in some of the sort of African-American cinemas where they're really vocal and they interact with the film. And it's such an amazing kind of event. It's so fun. There's people are just making comments and shouting things at the screen, and it becomes much more of a sort of, interactive event. But I went to see Toy Story 2 opening night at Odeon Leicester Square with a bunch of friends, and it was such an uproarious screening. Everybody was so vocal, and it was because it was so funny and delightful. And I remember coming out of the cinema and sort of scratching my head and saying to my friend, "I think that was the best movie I've ever seen." And it was just because I was so high from the experience of it. Obviously, it is a brilliant experience.
Yeah.
Sorry, a brilliant film. But it was just elevated. One of the most amazing cinematic experiences I ever had was Jackass, the movie, just because it elicited such an emotional response from everybody, because it was at once disgusting and terrifying and hilarious. And the audience was so invested in it that it was, you know, for a film which is basically a kind of, you know, a big version of an MTV prank show,
It was one of the most amazing cinematic experiences I ever had, just because everybody was so blown away by all the horrific shit in it.
There's something amazing, though, about comedies and horrors in particular.
Yes.
When they really grab hold of an audience.
Definitely.
Which brings me neatly on to, I want to get into some specifics now as well. So I want to ask about the funniest film you've ever seen in a cinema. You can't say your own stuff.
I wouldn't dare. even though it is. I'm amused by myself immensely. I'm trying to reach right back now as well, because I've seen so many things at the cinema, and also things that I've seen screened at the cinema. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like, oh man, I'd really have to think about that. What was yours? It might inspire me.
I think honestly, Austin Powers.
Oh, I do. Weirdly enough, I remember the ill-fated trip I made. I'm very, you know, anyone that knows me will know this. To see The Phantom Menace in New York. Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, was coming out that weekend as well. And I think in the morning after I saw The Phantom Menace as a palate cleanser, I went to the 10 o'clock showing of The Spy Who Shagged Me. And that really made me laugh. I remember being very, very amused by that film. I was practically on my own in the cinema as well. It wasn't like a great big roaring audience. It was just me kind of, maybe I was crying. Yeah, I think I was crying.
Yeah, when you said in the morning, I was going to ask how you were spelling morning.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, in morning.
Yeah, you were at the perfect low ebb for Austin Powers to get you.
And it did get me. And then that afternoon I went to see The Matrix, and you know, and then that made me joyful as well. But in terms of comedies, I'm trying to think of like comedians and actors that I find funny that I'm sure that I'll, you know, I mean, I know I didn't see that at the cinema. It's quite a difficult question to answer,
it
actually.
No, yeah. Wait till you see what I got next. It's gonna fuck you up.
I'll just be thinking about this question.
Yes, have a think about that one. See if you can answer this one whilst you're thinking about that one as well, which is scariest film you've ever seen in a cinema.
Weirdly enough, I think that might have been quite recently. I don't know about scariest, but I went to a film festival in Wrocław in Poland to show Lost Transmissions. Mm. And I saw the 3-hour director's cut of Midsommar. It really disturbed me. And I went home and I went back to my hotel that night, and I had a really restless sleep because it just stayed with me. Mm. I love Ari Aster. I think he's amazing. And I saw Hereditary at the cinema as well. And that as well, I think, you know, the moment in that shocks everybody, just I was agape for like a minute, just mouth open, like, what?
But that's not meant to happen.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
Hey, hang on. But yeah, oddly enough, you know, for a grown man, and I don't get scared at horror movies, really. I don't find ghosts scary or anything like that, and because I don't have any kind of belief that is being challenged by it. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Doesn't unnerve me. But Midsommar unsettled me because of the, I don't know, it was just beautifully executed, I think.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And also, I think you and I were roughly the same age, and I think we probably grew up at a time when we watched all the classic horror films on video first.
On VHS, yeah, absolutely. I saw all my formative horror movies on around my friend Chris's house on VHS tape. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So it's I haven't had a huge degree or a huge amount of those terrifying cinema experiences, although I remember watching The Exorcism of Emily Rose in a cinema and being so utterly freaked out. And I'm like you, I don't have a belief system that's necessarily being challenged by this, but there's always a creeping what if doubt at the back of my mind.
Yeah.
So stuff like that, The Omen and The Exorcist does get me. I remember going home and just not sleeping until about 4 a.m. because there's a plot motif in the film about how 3 a.m. is the devil's hour, and at 3 a.m.
That's
I had
right.
all my lights on and I was wide awake, and I was virtually performing some sort of ceremony to keep out the evil. It was so bizarre.
It's quite fun watching. I hesitate to sort of like applaud films that entirely operate via jump scares, but jump scares work with an audience because you all jump together, and I actually got quite exhausted by it in the end, but when I went to see the new It Part One, there were enough jump scares in that to make it really fun, you know, and a couple of moments as well. I remember the moment with the headless boy was really quite chilling. Mm. But I think to scare people nowadays, now that we're beyond, I don't know, I know a lot of us aren't, but you know, we've matured as a species, and we're a little bit even more beyond superstition than we were in the 70s and 80s now. And it's hard to touch be scared word, yeah. by, yeah. But so I think they, you know, the tendency to make horror films more about jumps, you can understand it because they're really trying to wring a response out of the audience. But I think truly clever horror filmmakers like Ari Aster, who I adore, that he knows how to just get into your bones and leave you just feeling uneasy and kind of a bit sick.
Yes. Ben Wheatley has the same effect. I remember when I saw Kill List for the first time and I came out, staggered out in the afternoon, and I felt like a truck had just hit me. And he called it the Kill List stare, that it was apparently it was something that pretty much everybody who saw that film experienced.
It's a cruelty to it, you know, and I think if you feel that in a room full of people, it's quite a strange feeling.
Let's get personal here. Do you remember the first date you had in the cinema? What that film was?
No. It was probably something in the '80s. I never got into that sort of snogging in the cinema. For me, the cinema was a place to watch a film. It wasn't a place to kind of like, you know.
Thank you.
Snog. I know it was dark. But, you know, your bedroom's dark. It's like, although I suppose, you know, there's the whole thing of the parents being at home. But I always found the cinema if I paid to see a movie, I'm not going to waste my time kissing some girl.
Precisely. That is what I told many of the girls who were interested in me, because there were loads of girls who were interested in me, all right? And that's what I told them. Another neat segue from those experiences. Do you remember crying in the cinema? Do you cry in the cinema easily?
Oh yeah, I really remember crying at E.T. because I was wearing I was wearing my parka, you know, the snorkel parka, the Cartman, you know, Kenny one from South Park that goes right up over your face. And I went to see E.T. on my own when I was 12. And I was crying so fucking much, I put my hood up because I was embarrassed. I literally kind of like just put my fur hood up around my head and zipped it up because I was just in floods. And then I took my little sister to see it, and I just watched her all the way through to see if she cried, and she didn't cry. Tough as nails, that kid. But I do remember that. And I remember crying at like Shadowlands. I remember crying at Saving Private Ryan and Schindler's List. But weirdly enough, both those films, I cried at afterwards. I remember watching Schindler's List, Odeon Leicester Square, same crowd as I saw Toy Story 2 with. Mm. And I stood up afterwards and I tried to say, I can't believe that actually happened. And I just broke down into complete floods of tears. It was so visceral. And you know, having endured what is ostensibly a 2.5 hour scream of pain, you know, it really, I think I watched it just agog, and then it all hit me afterwards.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary film. I remember watching that in the cinema as well. I just want to finish off with two very, very quick specific questions as well. So you're a big avid cinema goer. Do you snack in the cinema? If so, what's your choice of snack?
These days, I don't really. I try and take a bottle of sparkling water in with me, like a little Highland Spring or something, just to keep myself hydrated. But mainly because I'm just watching what I eat these days, because I've got to keep up with crews. But I did like a mix of salty and sweet popcorn back in the day.
Were you a pick a mix guy?
No, too much sugar. It just drove me up. My daughter is. My wife is a. Whenever we're in America, she's a junior mint fiend. She has to have them. It's like her thing when she goes to the cinema in America. I want Junior Mint. But I'm sort of slightly more kind of just about water and art now. No rustling.
Water. Yeah. Water, art, no rustling. Absolutely. Yeah. And what's your favorite seat in the cinema? What do you gravitate towards naturally?
Sort of center back middle. So I try and sit in the optimum sound position if I can. So I'm not too near the front. Not right in the middle rows, sort of A, B, C, D, E, F, G, sort of G, H kind of probably. Not too close to the back. Somewhere that's almost like bang center in the middle. So I'm right in the epicenter of the sound system, you know, so all the speakers are pointing at my head, if I can wrangle it. Yeah.
Yeah. If I get to an IMAX and they've given me a seat way in the corner, I'll just skip it because it's not the same. It's not the same.
No, I watched in the IMAX in the kind of sweet spot. And it was like, it was just like, it was insane. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. I've seen that. I probably just broke my... I didn't sign an NDA. Fuck you!
Sadly, I did, so I don't think I can. But it's good, isn't it?
It's fucking really fucking hell it good. Is, yeah.
I might just beep this whole section and leave people guessing what the hell they're talking about. Yeah. And I'm going to let you go in a second, Simon, but have you had a think about the funniest film or one of the funniest films you've ever seen in a cinema?
Well, I would say probably Jackass, because that experience was so vocal, and there was a lot of screaming, and obviously laughter is essentially a fear response deep down. That's what it is. And there was a lot of laughter just because it was the Empire Leicester Square and it was full, and those boys were doing the most insane, ill-advised things you could ask a person to do, and we were just enjoying it. So oddly, you know, it was a kind of clip show rather than a straight out narrative movie.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I remember watching. I can't wait for Jackass Forever. It's gonna be incredible. I just remember watching. I think it was Jackass 2 in a cinema, and with, you know, film journalists who are quite stuffed shirts, quite a lot of them. Naming no names, obviously, and stony silence from most critics, and then Bobbin's here just laughing myself hoarse.
Just roaring.
Yeah, absolutely roaring. And of course, you know, in a weird way, Mission Impossible, Jackass, they're close cousins.
You know, it's funny, actually. I remember I nearly gave Johnny Knoxville, I gave him an asthma attack because we were at CinemaCon and he was promoting his Fairground movie that he had out recently.
Yeah.
And we were promoting Fallout. And we were watching the presentation for... What's the robot from Transformers who had his own movie?
Bumblebee. Yeah,
it was the presentation for Bumblebee, and all the guys were up on stage in front of all the cinema, the distributors. You know, it's like a big convention for the cinema industry. And John Cena and they were talking really earnestly about Bumblebee, and I just turned to Johnny and said, "It's a fucking car that turns into a robot, man." And then he lost it, and then he lost it. So I don't know why he lost it quite as much as he did, but he almost died. And I just remember thinking, wow, all the things that he's done, all the crazy shit he's done, and he almost just died laughing at me making a snidey comment about Bumblebee.
Oh my god! Oh my god! That's amazing. Do you think that's what's going to happen in Mission 7? So that, you know, all the things that Ethan's done. And it's going to be Benji's going to make a joke to him at the end, and he's going to have an asthma attack, and that's it.
And he'll pass. Yeah, absolutely. That's no spoilers, but that's what's going to happen.
All right, excellent. I look forward to it next year, I guess, sometime next year.
Who knows?
Cannot wait. Cannot wait. Simon Pegg, it's been a pleasure as always. Thanks, man.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you. And that was Simon Pegg, and that is it for episode 4 of Celebration of Cinema in association with Meerkat Movies. From Compare the Market. Hope you guys enjoyed it. In a shocking move, Mr. Pegg didn't have anything to plug, so I'm going to point you in the general direction of Spaced, the Cornetto trilogy, the Star Trek films, Run Fat Boy Run, and of course, the Mission movies. All good viewing. Mission 7 is out next year, provided that it's finished filming by then, of course, and keep them peeled also for the Undeclared War coming to TV next year. And speaking of keeping them peeled, keep them peeled for the final two episodes of Celebration of Cinema. We're back next week with the penultimate episode, and I shall announce the identity of the guest in due course. Until we meet again, I'm off to hurl my headphones out of a window and see what happens.
Oh no. They've shattered. But those were expensive. Oh. Oh well. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Bye.